Hello and welcome to the Sackdown episode 27. Today we've got our first repeat guest with us. Mickey X is joining us after the great finals weekend of the LEC that I'm sure he enjoyed quite a bit. Getting to experience everything firsthand. So normally in these episodes we go and we talk about the player's history, but we've done that with Mickey a couple times now over the years. So this episode is going to be a little bit different. The format's going to be shorter and we're going to just talk about recent happenings in the LEC. But I thought a good place to start would be a little video that I did that I asked you if you saw right after the match against Koi. It all stemmed from an Oscar interview where he said that the team was playing disciplined on the day, and I did what I normally do, which is just like completely lose my mind over a relatively minuscule thing in general, just like, you know, an in-between game interview. But it was something that I think was a larger point that I've had and a larger gripe I've had with Fnatic over the years, which is the lack of discipline in Fnatic's play. So I made this video. I pointed out a couple moments where I thought that they should, like, you know, play, you know, more disciplined, and they're actually just giving over free kills. And you were in those games, Mickey, so I heard you saw the video. What were your initial thoughts when you're like, why the fuck is like Dom making a 25 minute video? What did you think about it?
Well, I thought it was pretty funny at first because, well, it kind of got like front page read and all that, so I had to watch it. And then, yeah, I mean, I kind of could see all the points that you're making that video. So the next day I kind of talked about those same points to my team, so it won't happen again.
Nice.
But I think it did happen again for the following day. But yeah, I think mostly Oscar's probably just thinking, because like in scrims the day before we played on stage, we kind of started to play more for tempo compared to our usual scrims. We're just like, as soon as the play ends, we like insta base all that. So like that was, I guess, his definition of being disciplined. So when we did it on stage like once or twice, maybe that's why he thought we were like disciplined, because he probably wasn't aware of what else was happening in the map, especially with like the Razor going back into the like the bot lane. We were like 4v5, and like, yeah, I guess maybe he just was not aware what was going on in the game. Yeah, but I had to witness all of this like firsthand. So yeah,
what Grabs ended up talking to me a little bit about it, and he's like, one thing you have to understand is like from the player perspective, based on what the shit that we see in scrims, like this was discipline, like this was pretty disciplined compared to the normal shit. So I was like, okay, you know, yeah. Fair point, you know, like comparatively, I mean, that's, it was
not quite discipline. But yeah, I guess it depends from whose perspective.
Okay,
because nice. Like in scrims, everyone is a bit more unhinged, but like on stage, some people are a little bit more disciplined than others. But yeah, I guess.
Yeah, Yamato, what did you think about the?
Bro, like when I was watching this, I got scared because I thought, you know, it's always you think that, you know, new players, Mickey comes in, Upset comes back, Grabs comes in as a head coach. You think, oh, maybe it's different this time. But then it's like, in terms of how those final series played out, it felt like all that baggage like kind of came through again. And obviously, it's like I work with some of those players, but it was some time ago, and we watched like all the Fnatic games and so forth. From like your experience, Mickey, in terms of like going through the motions of the final matches, did you feel like you discovered like new sides to your teammates? Was it something you could have prepared for? Was it something you saw in scrims? You guys mentioned already that they were messy.
I mean, I could kind of see it quite early on in the split. I feel like it was just not easy to fix, I guess, some of the habits that we have. So for sure, we're going to have to work on that a lot for next split. Like we already talked a little bit about what we can do better for like spring, so we don't repeat the same mistakes, I guess. And I think a lot of it just comes down to just actually watching more games together as a team, because nowadays, or like for example for winter, everyone's kind of did their own thing, you know, just play solo queue as much as you can, and then yeah, that's about it besides scrims. But we didn't actually get to watch many games together, because I think our biggest problem is just agreeing on how the game should be played, because everyone has a little bit of a different idea. But I feel like the more games we watch together and talk about it, the better it's gonna be. So yeah, I don't think it was like anything new towards playoffs, but I guess it was a little bit more amplified because of more stress. So some people got, I guess, stressed, and there was a lot of panic in the comms, for example, because, you know, like enemy team just suddenly has movie boots and they have map hack and they have everything. We like can't do anything in the game. Everything is bad. So yeah, for sure the stress was a big amplifier of the regular split, where also the enemy teams were just really bad.
In general, though, for you guys, like, because Gax also followed up with doing like the scrim thing, and in terms of like scrim practice, like in conjunction with like where the result was, obviously you want to win the split, you have the ambition to win the split, and that's your state of mind. But in terms of where everything landed from your scrim practice, did you expect things to play out this way? Because for us, obviously, it was a big fucking shock that KC made it all the way through and winning the finals. What were your takeaways from like scrims from the other teams and you guys' level in comparison to the other teams?
I mean, from scrims, I could kind of see that us, KC, and G2 were the top three teams. Like, I think everyone else was kind of not that great. Like, Giants kind of fell off towards the end. At the start, they were actually not bad, but afterwards, it was a bit rough. But yeah, I think in the end, I just thought that it's going to come down to how people play on the day and how they draft, because I think draft was a big deciding factor in most of the series. So yeah, I thought it could go either way, but I thought we would be able to pull it off on the days, but we couldn't, so that sucked.
Where do we go from here, Dom? Do we ask about how this MF pick came up?
I think we go series by series. So,
I mean, series by series, yeah.
Yeah, when we start with the Koi series, I think the thing that was so like interesting to me about your play, especially in this game number one, is it felt like you guys were naturally like winning the game, and there's just so many moments where you guys just feel like the need to squeeze so much. It's like that was kind of the idea of the video, is like this moment you're naturally winning, you're up like 1.5k gold, you're scaling, everything is good. But it feels like for years now, and I'm sure that you could probably experience it on the other side of things when you're playing versus G2 against Fnatic, it feels like Fnatic, it's never enough. Like whenever there's a play made, it's never enough to just like accept the results of the play and take small wins. It feels like you guys are always going for like massive wins. Like you guys want to kill them over and over again, where it's like, hey, the game is in a pretty chill state. From your playing with the team, like where does this come from? Like how do you feel about like the reason why Fnatic feel so pressured in games to get so much? Like what Yamato always says is they're trying to squeeze blood from a stone, you know, like you're just really trying to like get the most out of every situation. And I feel like in League, yeah, there's times where you need to squeeze and there's times where you don't need to squeeze, and it's all depending on your draft and how you interact. So now that you've played the games, and you know, from when you played against them before, like where do you think this comes from, and what's the approach to correcting it?
I mean, I think for sure there's a lot of times where we get a little bit too overhyped when we have like a winning scenario in the game. I think the big culprits are me, Razork, and Oscar. I think sometimes we get a little bit too overhyped, yeah, when we're in a good position. Like a lot of times when we're like in a lane swap, me and Oscar are like laning 2v2 and we get like a good trade. Instead of just being happy with the trade, we like decide to all in, and then enemy jungler's there and then we die. It happens so often, by the way. Like
yep.
And then yeah, with Razork a lot of times, like in mid game, he feels like he's like stronger than he is, or like just wants to pour something because he feels OP. Because playing jungle champs, you know, makes sense. But
yeah,
sometimes he wants to squeeze a bit more because he wants to win harder, right? Which I kind of get it. Like I was used to doing the same like all the time, because I thought that if like enemy team is making a play and their play goes wrong, the game just insta ends on the spot. But on the other side, if you just don't do anything, they're also losing. So like I can kind of see his point of view as well. But yeah, I think, is there something we need to actually talk about more often? And the more times it happens and it goes bad, then the more reason to stop doing it. And yeah, now we have some good ammunition.
Hey, if you keep on doing it, don't worry about it, I'm just gonna make content out of it, you know.
Like, yeah, it's perfect, everyone wins. Yeah, we're gonna learn. Yeah, you're gonna get content.
But it's, I think, a win-win, yeah, across the board.
A lot of times as well it happens on stage that we're kind of like a bit too scared to do much. Because, yeah, as I mentioned before, like enemy teams have more boots and my pack 24/7. So if we feel like a lot of the plans we make, we always like call it off because this and that can go wrong and blah, blah, blah. So a lot of times I feel like maybe we want to overcompensate for that, especially like with Ivan, because then he wants to go for extra plays because he wants to give confidence to the rest of the team that we can actually go for plays and stuff. I feel like that's my theory, at least.
Like a psychological thing. So he's like...
I think so.
Oh, because okay.
I think, like, Upset, for example, sometimes he's, like, kind of calling off a lot of stuff that Razork maybe disagrees with, that he thinks is, like, we should do it. But then he wants to prove that we can do it by going in, you know?
Yeah.
But that's my theory. I have to, you know, dig deeper on that one.
So it's like a protest type thing where he's just protesting
the
Hilly
method. This is the Hilly method.
I mean, there is for sure like a lot of VOD reviews happening in our games where during the game we're discussing if a play is like good or not, and then it's like, oh, it's good. No, it's not because of this. And like, oh yeah, but I told you we could have done this. Like there was like example, like in a best of one, I think we played, maybe it was like BDS. I think where Upset was like calling for a dive. We're like playing Kalista something versus Braum. And Razork is like pathing there. And then we say, oh, like Razork says, no, no, we can't dive. I'll go back to farm. And then Upset was like, oh, we could have dove, but it's fine. And it's like, no, we couldn't. Yeah, we could. Just play the game. Like,
that's the best.
Talk about it.
I love the passive aggressiveness, you know, like, oh yeah, I mean, we could have won the game here, but I mean, I guess like it's okay. You can get Krugs as well. Everyone can be happy, you know, like
I was trying to like make it like not, like I was trying to basically talk about it, like the more times it happened. And I think the last time was basically like before we played the Koi series was like a day where I was kind of just like fed up with it because there was like so much about reviewing. Like as soon as we lose a fight, we're just talking about like what we should have done like this fight or like how we should play the next fight instead of talking about like summoners or what we're actually doing for the next play. So it's like a lot of waste of time. So I think after that talk, we started doing it a bit better, but it was like a little bit late in the split. So I think for next split, if we can stick to that, where we actually only provide useful information, I think we're going to be way better off. Yeah.
Damn, that's actually crazy to hear about. I didn't know that the VOD reviews were going on in game. Like when you first said VOD reviewing, I was like, oh, are you talking about like just the over focus on a few key moments in games? Because that's like what happens with pretty much every, like, I swear every VOD review, every team that I've ever seen VOD review, it's like you go into it and people are triggered about like a couple moments that don't really matter, and it's just you fixate on like these small moments for the entire time where it's like, hey guys, like we can probably like swap our lanes around this time. Like we could probably like look for this object. Like where I feel like the more useful conversations are around like the pacing of the game and like things you can actively improve on. But yeah, the VOD reviews mid game, I feel like that's super illegal. You know, like isn't
that's
that
a
just
big no no?
That's a big no no, man. Like that's
I'm not
that's
a big crazy. Fan of that one. So
yeah,
the more the faster we stop doing it, the better we're gonna be.
Yep.
You know, we jumped to the Koi series, but we just skipped by the BDS one because that was. That was a dirty one.
I don't want to talk about that.
You don't
want
to talk about it.
Yeah, we can skip that one.
A quick hit. What the fuck happened to the BDS series, brother? Because that was way too close,
it.
Bro.
You know what's worse is I reviewed it, and I bet BDS in game 3, and you guys ended up fucking winning. So what the fuck, man? Like I was so triggered. I was like, how the fuck did Fnatic end up winning this game? Is this game not fucking over? Like, what
have
the
plot armor? Yeah, that was plot armor there. But yeah, game 1 was a bit of a miscommunication in the draft department where we were discussing a lot of scenarios, but none of the scenarios we discussed if Skarner is open, because we're assuming it's going to be banned, right? So then Skarner was open, and then we were like, oh, wait, should we pick Skarner? And then we were like, no, I think we'll just go with our plan and we just first pick Zyra, because Zyra should be good to Skarner. But the thing is, we didn't really actually practice into Skarner in any of our games in scrims, so it was like a bit of a shocker in the draft department. And then as well, in the game, Razor just went and like face-checked the Skarner, like both at level 3, and he got flash-burned. And then he face-checked him again, and he died. And then we just got mega-fucked. But yeah, I guess after that, they kind of just managed to throw the game. I guess we played Zyrokan, so that was kind of a free win. Like, Zyrokan into Nautilus was pretty nice.
Yep.
And they kind of kept getting caught over and over again. So our draft kind of...
Garen was not the greatest enemy Garen.
For sure, yeah.
Yeah.
And then game 2. What was game 2?
This is Humanoid on Yone. Do you remember? You guys...
Playing Galio.
You guys was 5-6 gold ahead and he was getting caught on side.
The Galio pick was not optimal for sure as well. But I think we mostly just messed up on the second grubs. I think that was there's some miscommunication there as well for sure.
What's the idea behind the Galio there? Because like I wasn't watching the draft, but normally like the way that I see Galio being flex support here ever is the idea of like denying the Galio for like the Rumble lane because people don't want to play Rumble to Galio normally. But you guys just picked it like R5. So was it just like you just wanted a melee support and that's what you decided on, or what was the idea for the Galio?
It was pretty much that. I don't remember if there was like Nautilus and stuff open, but like
Nautilus Rakan were gone. Yeah, enemy team, picked Rell. And then, yeah, Poppy and Braum were gone as well.
Yeah, so the thing is, Leona, I think, is quite bad into Rill. And they also had Nidalee, which Leona's not good into. And what else did they
have? Zeri.
So yeah, Leona would be kind of not great there. So I kind of just wanted to pick a champ that can kind of follow up on like Yone ult and stuff. And can have some kind of CC AoE for the Rumble, which was not really the greatest. Yeah. And into Rill, it's like not the greatest matchup, but it's like fine. I can cancel his jump in theory. Like if he does try to QW me, I can E backwards and I will cancel him. Yeah. And also when he ults on top of my team, if I ult him, I get some shield and I deny some follow up from enemy team because they have to wait until I land, until otherwise I get knocked up. So it's more like of a peel champ, but also in that comp it didn't really make too much sense.
Thoughts on like a Pantheon there?
A Pantheon could be alright, yeah.
Pantheon,
I think I should have just picked Alistar. I think Alistar was open that game.
Yep.
So
you know, when I'm on stream, when I'm walking down the street, or when I was in the LEC studio, people always think, oh, he carries himself with confidence because he has a beard and he has a deep voice. The truth is, guys, is that I just smell good. And I smell good absolutely everywhere, from balls to grundle to armpits, because of Mando. So, Mando as a product, you know, clinically proven to just... you know, be better than a regular shower where you just use soap, you know? It's clinically proven to make sure that you stay stink-free for 72 hours because you don't know. Maybe you're in one of those hangover 2 situations where you wake up in the middle of nowhere and then you're like, holy shit, where's my wallet? Where's my keys? Where is my homie? Where is my pet monkey? But all of those concerns just quickly go away because you take a whiff and you damn, you still smell good. So, this, of course, Mando has been created by a doctor. It's paraben-free, you know. It's clinically proven to just block all odor day and night up to 72 hours, as I just already mentioned. This comes in many, many different forms. There's the whole body deodorant. There's the solid deodorant stick. There's also, you know, a spray deodorant that is just aluminum-free and ideal for hard-to-reach places, if that's one of the issues that you face. Now, we offer for you, our special listeners of course, the Sacktown, a little bit of a discount on the Mando Starter Pack, which is, of course, perfect for the new customers out there. It comes with a Soda Stick deodorant, Cream 2 deodorant, 2 free products of your choice. I always mentioned, you know, the deodorant wipes that work so well for me. And, of course, free shipping. That equates to 40% off your Starter Pack if you just use the code TSD at checkout at shopmando.com. That is shopmando.com. Please support our show and tell them that we sent you. Smell fresher, stay drier, and boost your confidence from head to toe with Mando. Thank you very much. As a side note, to follow up what you said, in terms of like preparing fearless-wise, because there was like some traps you guys fell into, did you feel like it was a lot more difficult? Like, what was your experience in like preparing for fearless, especially like later in the BO5s?
Yeah, there was definitely some traps you fell into, like the Jarvan one, when there was no mobile AD carries.
Yeah.
So there's for sure a lot of things to think about. I think it's quite fun, personally, because I feel like I can always play a lot of different stuff that fits the situation well. But yeah, overall, it's just a bit of chaos overall, yeah, because it's hard to prepare for a lot of these jobs, because you never know what is going to be open, what's going to be banned. So
yeah,
I just like this. It's a new thing every game.
It's also really weird to prepare for, because I think I saw the way that you guys did scrims in Europe, and because the first round robins are all best of ones, you guys didn't start scrimming fearless until like halfway through the split, right?
Yeah.
And then there's this really weird thing. I mean, the problem that we ran into in North America is like, you're playing... you guys didn't have this, but we were playing best of threes and a potential best of five, because there's only one best of five. Our semifinals were best of three. We're playing best of threes and best of fives potentially on the same weekend. So it's like you're doing some blocks where you do like five games fearless. You're doing some blocks where you do the double three game fearless. And it's kind of like weird to scrim, because like you don't know if you're even going to play a best of five. I mean, only two teams play a best of five the entire split out of the 16 in LTA, right? So there's only two teams that actually play one best of five. So the whole time you're trying to like determine is like, I mean, sure, like we're talking a lot about like these game four and game five fearless drafts, which are way different, because then like so many engaged champions get banned. It's like, oh, Lulu is OP now. How are we going to navigate the situation? But then it's like, what the fuck? Like, we didn't even play a game five or a game four of the entire situation. So we'll get into the Lulu in a bit, but just in terms of like the scrimming point, it must be really weird to go from scrimming like just normal scrims, the scrims you've had for a while, to then scrimming best of three fearless, to then scrimming best of five fearless. Like, you only did one week of best of five fearless, right?
Yeah, I guess it was a little bit weird, but I thought it was just fun because I got to play some weird shit. Yeah, I think we could have probably started preparing for fearless already when we were like qualified for playoffs. I think we could have ended a bit earlier. But I guess a lot of the teams didn't want to do that because I guess a lot of teams were still not secured. But yeah, I mean, at least now it's whatever because there's no more best of ones, so that's nice. But it was for sure a bit awkward.
Yeah.
It's interesting how, like, it's like, and it seems, it's sad that fearless is going away because it seems like it just hasn't been figured out completely yet, you know? It's like...
Yeah, it might be going
like
away.
A lot of like a potential in it to do like it, like to innovate, because it seems like everything is going to be so cookie cutter, like rather fast. And at first I was like, I'm against it, but because it's like you kind of lose precision because like people are going to play champions they don't play often. But there is an element of strategy that is like super, super fun about it, because it was such a juxtaposition in terms of like what you can do and what you can throw at the table. It seems like there's the coach gap can be much greater than ever, because I imagine from your side, it's like, are you like actively in the game thinking about like the draft, or do you feel like the time in between is like enough? Or are the coaches just lobbing questions at you and can you play this? Okay, let's go. Or how involved are you like as the series progresses? Because you guys had like that best of five that went to five games in the end.
Yeah, so we kind of think about it mostly after the game is played, right? Actually, there was like, I guess the game one versus Koi, I think we were deciding what mid laner to pick. And I said, I think we should just pick Corki because we had like Corki Vi something. But I wanted to pick Corki just so they can't pick it the next game because they played Corki Flex. And we kind of like CBA dealing with that. So we just picked the game one so they can't pick it game two. So that was like the only actual scenario where we like picked something just to deny it for game two. Because also our draft was already like OP.
Is
so
that why you picked MF in game five to deny it for game three?
Yeah. That's the reason.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Just making sure, you know, just checking.
But other than that, usually we just then go backstage. Yeah, we just like look at the list of champions that are still open. And then the coaches ask, like, what do you think is OP? Does anyone have like any champs they want to first pick? Or like, yeah, what is actually strong right now? If they can, if you can use some bans for it. And then we try to theorycraft that a little bit. And then, yeah, I guess we just go from there to decide what is next.
Yeah, I think for me, the main thing is like in three game fearless, it's pretty hard to deny picks because it's super risky. If you like lose one game, it's like who knows how many games you're actually going to be able to play. But in best of five fearless, it feels like you have way more ability to do things like, for example, take like a Pantheon jungle so they can't play support if they have somebody who likes it, or, you know, the Corki thing that you talked about where you take Corki so that they don't have the Corki flex. It feels like in best of fives, it's a lot better. I'm just waiting for the one team that's going to be crazy enough to actually sack a game intentionally and just draft like five support champions or some shit. And
there's no way.
Deal with
there's
the
no way that's happening.
I mean, look, LPL, we're going to be in Nirvana group. We're going to have Nirvana group best of fives. We might see some shit in the LPL. Like maybe some team just decides to fucking run it and just get people off their picks. But yeah, no, I think it's something really interesting. And then also, I mean, we'll see what happens with Fearless. I know that they're saying that LCK Cup is probably going to still be Fearless. I assume LPL will probably still be Fearless because LPL was doing Fearless like even the split before this. And we'll see like how teams end up adapting to like a full split of Fearless, because I do think that it is just a better format for watchability, and especially when it comes to people playing in standard lanes. I feel like if we have standard lanes without Fearless, it's going to be punishing. Like, as somebody who watched all that, I think it's really easy to forget what the metas were. But I mean, I watch people draft like Maokai Vi, Zeri Lulu, or Zeri Yumi versus Philios Lulu just over and over again with like some Lucian Nami thrown in. I've seen this for so long now that I don't know if I could go back to there after watching so much Fearless, the split.
It would be so strange if only like a couple of regions go and then MSI doesn't change. I could imagine that there is probably like a global ongoing conversation, but I wonder if the just due to competitive integrity that they'll be like careful with changing it, because usually like if a year is structured a certain way, then usually like changing it midway would be weird. Because if LCK is the only one and then they go to MSI and there's no fearless, it's like, what the fuck did you do with your time? It feels kind of silly. Something I wanted to ask you both to bring just the topic of fearless as a follow-up. It's like blue side is like heavily skewed, especially like in LPL playoffs and LCK.
Not in LEC.
Not in LEC. My theory is that fearless, especially like on blue side, when you go into deeper scenarios, it's like you come in and you have like all your blind picks like set up. It's like, oh, we're going to ban these 2, 4, 5 and just lock it in. And then red side is not reacting appropriately. And I think this is a whole psyop, blue side versus red side. And I think there's deeper things at play, because in a lot of cases, in my opinion, is if you switch the drafts, then the other side is just like winning the draft. And if they played on red side, then it would have been like that. But then the counter argument is Yamato, but they got that draft because they are on blue. But then I see elements like, no, it's not true. They just are in a different state of mind where they want to counter. So this is my crazy thoughts. Where do you guys land on this whole fucking blue side, red side conversation?
I mean, I guess I can go first. So I think that when it comes to red side, I think it is harder to draft, and you just have to be able to like play red side. Like there's just red side champions in my mind. Like, for example, I think Zyra is like a really good red side champion because, you know, if you pick it on three, like you're going to be able to leave up Skarner, pick Zyra on red side. And I think that you just will have way more ability to play a game from that position. Like Poppy is a good red side champion in my mind, because you can use it as a counter to like dash champions. And then if you do see like dashes on the other team early, you can pick the Poppy on three and then ban out, you know, lanes that might be difficult for Poppy. So I think that it's just, you have to be willing to play the counter picks when you actually play on red side. And I think a lot of teams just don't have these like niche champions, you know, in their arsenal. And I think, like, for example, on blue side, if you go something like Zyra on blue side, then you could answer with like a Nidalee, for example, but not every team is willing to play Nidalee on stage. And I just feel like you just have to be more flexible as a team to get wins on red side. And I feel like a lot of teams just don't have the ability to, like, they don't have the champion pools to really like have the full arsenal of available counters. That's at least my take on it.
Yeah, I can see that. I think for me, at least, I think just blue side is in general just better, as long as there's a lot of OP champs you can pick. So like the first 2-3 games of fearless, I think blue side's always just like stronger. But then like game 4 or 5, I think red side kind of becomes OP because there's not really many first picks to pick. Like the Lulu first picks are maybe not as optimal in the game 5s compared to like a Maokai or a Vi. Yeah, like I feel like, yeah, after there's no actual OP champs to pick, I think red side just has kind of an advantage, because yeah, the only reason blue side is actually good because you get the first you get to choose what you wanna, like what OP champ you get, but if there's no OP champs, then sucks. And then yeah, I think red side is just better if you have bigger champion pool, as you said, yeah, because then you just kind of can counter their whole like comp or whatever strategy they're going for if you have the champs for it.
Yep. I think it's time, Yamato. I think we go into the series versus KC.
We just build that up. 1, 2, 3, 4, and then 5. Let's start with the first ones.
Yeah, so the first games, I mean, you guys came into the series, and I mean, it looked like, when I was watching, I'm like, oh, is KC just going to 3-0 them? It looked like KC really had your guys' number in the early games. I was actually impressed with the battle back, because after like the first two games, it did look kind of hopeless. Like, what was your experience like playing the game? And I know you had a mid-series interview that you looked really pained in. So we can talk about that. I think that was after game 3.
I thought it looked a bit rough after game 2 as well, because like, okay, so first game 1. I feel like I was mega running it in the real game. But yeah, I think, again, we kind of messed up in the draft department a little bit. There was maybe not so many optimal picks after, in like 4 or 5, I would say. But yeah, I think that one we just kind of misplayed as well. Like, that game was for sure winnable, but I was kind of ending that one as well. And then game 2, I just can't actually believe we lost that game. Like, that game was crazy. So
I can't believe that you guys didn't lose faster. That's what I thought. Like, when I was watching the game, I'm like, this game is fucking over. And then after, like, you guys came back, I'm like, shit, like, holy, like, I guess Fnatic can actually win this one. Because to me, I mean, after Vladdy got all those kills in the mid game, I was like, this game's a wrap. So what was the experience like playing it?
I thought after the level 3 where we killed them both 2v2, both of them, yep, I thought it was a wrap after that, because Ashe losing lane is not as useful. But yeah, I guess then after that we decided to get like 4-4-0, I think, in the river. So that was definitely not optimal for the game. But even that, like after that, we just kept taking like outnumbered fights and just losing and just getting caught perma. And then at some point we decided, oh, maybe we should just play our comp how it's supposed to be played. So I go in front, I hook the first guy, Talia uses WE, we one shot whoever is there. I'm getting Kalista ulted so they can't kill me, and we get a 1-4-0 every single time. And then Rumble has to press ult on the target I'm ulting. That's it. That's all we need to do in the game. Then we started doing it. We actually won some fights. We had like a 5-1 kind of ace, where I think we could
have. You guys might have been able to end it. Yeah, yeah. Like when I was watching, I'm like, can they end? Like it was kind of like a coin flip to me.
I thought it was doable for sure. Like it would probably be like with Ashe Poppy respawning, but I think we would just ignore them and be able to end because the champions are useful. But I was also fine with just like going for the Baron because it's like the safer play, because after that we found our formula on how we can win these fights. But then afterwards, in the last fight, I got Kalista ulted first, so we got the Poppy, okay, and then we went to Nash, and then we were like, okay, so I'll go look for a flank, and I can zone this Sejuani, and then we can finish Nash, or we like turn. And then we kind of went to the same side with Talia, and then he kind of walled me out, so I couldn't actually join or like go zone. So I flashed over the wall in the pit, and then I was like, okay, I ulted Sejuani, and then we can finish. And then after, like, no, go turn. So then I was like, okay. Then I hook in, I hook a wall, I die, and then we all get dazed. I'm like, yeah, I guess we just fucked this. So that game was like absolutely crazy. Then we lost. Like, I was in shock. But then, yeah, game three, they went for the Zillion. It was an attempt for sure. I think the lane deaths could be avoided by them, but they kind of like griefed that one. And then Panther tried to salvage, and he also came to die. But then somehow the game was actually still close. So I was pretty surprised by that as well. And yeah, I guess the team fights were also, we were just like kind of not on the same page with like when who we actually wanted to go on. Like there was a fight with Baron where there's a Victor with no flash standing in like the banana bush. And we're doing Nash and we're turning like 45. And then we Ornulled the Pantheon instead of the no flash Victor. And then Victor just like kind of one shots most of us. So that was not great. And then me and Radzik were not really going at the same time as well. Also, like that game, I was like, there's no way we're losing this. Like, I just refused to believe. I was like, one of my only zero death games. And I had a Dark Seal with 10 stacks and had 1.5k golden base. And I was like, I could go for the Mikhail's here, but like, I kind of need a Magi's otherwise.
That's actually mental.
And then I did manage to go up to 21 stacks without Magi's. They didn't die. And I was like, okay, maybe it's winnable. And then the game four, I picked Pyke. I kind of wasn't really sure what to pick there, but I guess they blinded Braum and I had Kai'Sa, so I was like, yeah, Pyke makes some sense. It's not like the best Pyke game. Like, it would not be like, yeah, it was fine against their Caitlyn, Zyra, Braum, but against Jax was a bit hard. And what else did they have? Yone. It's also not the greatest. But we kind of had like a very easy setup. Like, we had Vi, Yone, so I didn't actually have to do much. I just kind of like pressed E to stun them after my Vi goes in. So the game felt very easy to play. And we were actually kind of on the same page doing the combos and stuff. After that game, I was like, okay, nice, they're cooked, like, we're gonna reverse with these noobs. And then we were discussing, you want to do the game five thing?
You've set it up perfectly. Good.
What is like the, I would just like to hear what your guys' formula is, because in Fearless, because the players are playing the game and the coaches are like, you know, watching, in before it felt like, because people were going to be playing similar champs, coaches would spend more time like talking about like the actual game and how people should play. Where now I feel like coaches have to spend a lot of time actually prepping the draft for game five. So how does it work like in your team? Do you guys have like a plan presented to you the second you get off stage, like so that you can kind of like wrap your minds around like what is still up in the, you know, in the next game? Because obviously when you're playing the game, you can't be thinking about like, oh yeah, and like all these champions are out and Fearless, so you can't be doing all the math there. So is that like where things start? Like the coaches are like, all right, these are the OPs that are up, you know, first pick Lulu is what we're looking for here because, you know, all the engaged supports are out. Is that how the situation goes?
Yeah, I mean, that was pretty much like, we just had a few scenarios of which champs we want to first pick. So like we were discussing like Aurora, we were discussing like Nocturne, there was like Lucian, there was Lulu. They kind of banned like Skarner, Nocturne, Lucian, so they kind of removed three of them. Yep. And then we had like Aurora, Lulu. And I was like thinking, there's not really any supports left like that are actually good into Lulu. So if you pick Lulu with like a hyper carry, there's nothing that they can actually pick to like match the scaling.
Is MF a hyper carry in your mind?
We'll get there.
Okay.
So that was the idea, right? So we pick Lulu.
Okay.
They can't match up with an enchanter that is as strong.
Yeah, I was with you there. I was watching. I was like, you know what? Okay, first pick Lulu, hyper carry. Let's go. Okay, continue.
Tristana coming through, you know?
So, and then, yeah, there was not really much there. So we bent Blitzcrank on three as well, so they actually don't have like a good pick, even though there was not really any setup for the Blitz pick. Like, for example, in the KCG2 series in semis, they blinded Lulu against Maokai, so that was like a free Blitz game. That was completely crazy. So at least in that game 5, there was no Maokai, no setup for Blitzhook, so even then we could still like play against it, but the thing is that there was really just like nothing else to ban, so we just ban Blitz, like we get a better Lulu case. And yeah, then we kind of forgot that Jarvan exists as a champion, because it was not really in our playing field, I guess. So they pick Jarvan, Aurora 1-2, so then Upset is like, oh, I can't really play any like hyper carries that are good into this. Like,
is that actually true?
Yeah. I mean, I think we could still go like Tristana if you wanted like a jump, right? Because Tristana Lulu is actually, I think, a fine lane. Like, it's still a hyper carry once he gets items, you know? Like, it's just not... It's not like a Twitch or a Sivir, I guess, but...
Was that floated? Like, was Tristana mentioned there in that spot?
Yeah.
Or was it like just after hindsight? Okay. Bam.
Well, we talked about it a bit. And then we also said that if they go MF on 3, it's going to be like hard. And then we wanted Volibear for like early game, I guess, and we wanted the tank with the Lulu.
Yep.
So we kind of speak Volibear for to kind of get us to the late game. But I think, yeah, the issue is we kind of didn't have the late game.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree with that. Like, people were, I saw some people talking about, like, isn't Volibear weird with hyper carry? It's like, no, I like the Volibear plus hyper carry there. I wasn't sold on the fact that you can't play in a mobile hyper carry like into Jarvan. Like, I know obviously like his ult counters you when you have no flash, but I think that you can play in a way where like you're not giving him multiple times to like ult you, where like, you know, if you flash, if he tries to ult and you flash, you win the fight there, because we see it I believe in like LCK we saw similar strategies where people would first pick Lulu in later games, but it felt like it was okay to pick like a Jinx with it and just like just play smart, you know, like just don't give them perma angles. But I guess that's something that probably takes like a decent amount of nuance, and it's like not easy to play like that in general.
I mean, I think in hindsight, I think Twitch would be probably the best pick, because I think Twitch, he's the one who decides when the fight starts, you know. He just goes stealth, and then he opens up, and then why does he care if Jarvan ults him, you know? Like, he's already like shooting everyone. Like, he doesn't care if he's like stuck in there. He's stuck in there with him. So I think that would be the best, but we lost.
But we lost. Yeah, I'm always I'm generally a big hater of like the denial picks. Like in general, I'd rather just play a comp that makes sense into a comp that like is a little bit harder to play into than just deny them a pick, but then have our comp not make sense. And also, it feels like MF is just kind of like a useless champion if it's not put in good conditions. I mean,
I think for sure you need the Wombo combo for the MF.
Yeah,
but also I think you should just, most of the time, just draft around your first pick, because otherwise, why are you first picking the champion? No? Like, if I'm first picking Lulu, I want the champs to be good with Lulu.
Definitely.
For me, it was also like a bit weird. But I think also in 4-5, we could maybe salvage with something like Camille Galio. I think Galio could be pretty good into Jarvan Aurora, and it was open by that point. So that could be another pick that could make the situation a bit easier. But yeah.
That's what I thought. That was my prediction, that you guys are just going to drop AD and just pick something, whatever's left, and just pick Galio, Volibear, because how I viewed it was that, oh, Razork watched LPL this morning and wants to play Volibear. It's going to just copy the Anyone's Legends draft, you know, and just so I can take it home. Yeah, that's how I viewed it. Like in the aftermath, it's like... Like, I did think that you and Upset, I think you guys had the upper hand, like bot lane wise, in terms of like your overall like reflection of the series. Does it feel in your mind that it just came back down to this big draft mistake? What is your overall impression of like KC in that moment in time before they played the finals, of course?
Well, I thought we should have won 3-1 because of game 2. Like, I just still
game 2 is
game 2, but. Yeah, I mean, after that, I was like, yeah, I mean, they still played like quite good. So I thought they have a chance for sure in the finals. I didn't think they would stomp them, but I thought they had a good shot. Yeah. And I think if we made it there, we would probably do good as well. But I don't know.
Yep. So was Yike the secret carry of G2 all along?
He was.
Analysis? Yeah, he's just the GOAT. And you guys were
he's
all
kind of the GOAT, yeah.
Yeah. And then you guys scapegoated him at the end. That's kind of crazy.
Hey, not me.
Oh, not you, not you. You guys. Everyone but you. True, actually. Is that why you got kicked? Because you said, let's keep Yike.
Yeah. Like, what? Get out.
We always said that Yike needs to suffer a bit, you know, but he barely suffered here, you know.
I do think that he played better in KC. I think he had to play better to win. So, like, I do think he improved. So it is.
And he carried by Vladdy and Killist and Targo. his smites are like actually crazy. I don't know how he wins every smite, by the way.
Yeah.
Kind of wild.
Yes. He outsmited Kalista end, but it was really a real Kalista end when you guys had it. It was a 300 damage Kalista end.
Yeah,
that's crazy. Like after Worlds, when you guys lost that smite against T1, and then now he's smiting like this, bro. It's kind of fucked up, bro. He was just holding back on G2.
Yeah, I mean, he realized at that moment when you guys let Owner enter the pit there, he's like, there is no situation I'm gonna be in where I'm not going to have to 50-50 smite. So I might as well just approach everything like a 50-50 smite. It's pretty based, honestly. It's the right mentality to have, you know? Something's always coming to steal it.
That was the plan. We had to teach him the hard way.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about Vladdy, because he was probably the player that I was most impressed with over all of LEC. Like, I think this guy is really insane. And you got to play against him. You've seen his growth over the last, like, year or so. What do you think of this player? Because to me, it's like, I feel like he was just such a force in all the games you were playing. I mean, even the games that you guys were winning, like into the victor, it felt like he just always was like the final boss of the game in a way.
Yeah, no, I definitely can see that. Like, I also didn't think he was going to be this good, like, at the start of the year. Like, I thought he was, like, decent, you know, like, from playing solo queue or... Actually, in solo queue, he always ends me, so not from solo queue, but, like, from doing, like, in-houses and stuff and scrims.
Nah.
Every time I play with him, he's like completely running it. Like, I would dump him if I was playing solo queue against him mid.
All right, okay.
But, in scrims and stuff, like, he always does really well. Like, just very solid, stable player. And yeah, I mean, I could kind of see it in all the games. There was not really, like, he never made like crucial mistakes to lose him the game, and he was always there to win them the games when he had like a lead or a good position. So yeah, overall, he was just very good.
Yeah, I think the things that impress me about him a lot are just how he's able to, like, flow between different champions. Like, when he plays a control mage, like, his idea of, like, which angles to zone and, like, how to, like, play out fights, I think are really top tier. And you normally don't see that from, like, rookie players, you know, or, like, you know, young players. I still consider him a rookie because he's played less than 1 year. He's a rookie to me, right? So,
yeah.
When I see a player like that, and, you know, like, he'll be able to switch to something like Yone, it's normally when I see players that have good ideas, they're almost like one tricks in a way in terms of like the style that they play, and then they can improve on other styles as time goes. But it feels like he is like a very good idea of like when he's playing an Aurora versus a Azir versus a Victor versus a Yone, like all the different ways that he could play out fights and you know, all the conditions that he needs to play around. So I was generally really impressed with this player. I mean, that's the MVP right there of the split.
Yeah.
I agree. Mickey, you mentioned solo queue. It was always, I saw these posts and they always made me happy about G2 and KC being like all in the top 10. What's up with Fnatic? Do you think solo queue doesn't matter? Is that what's up?
There's
Why
one
are you
player,
GM, bro? Okay, my fiance is almost higher LP than you, bro.
Not challenger. Let me see who it is.
My fiance is like 800 LP, bro. She's
standing
over you, bro.
Calm down. Hold your horses. Okay.
So,
compared to most players in this region, I do not care about my LP gains, so I play to improve. So I play on my Smurf account so I can play duo queue with my duo queue partner.
Ooh.
And as you can see, we were doing quite well in the lane phase because maybe other teams should consider playing some duo queue. I don't know. That's just
good
my
answer.
Opinion. But yeah, I do play on my main and I do lose a lot. You know, this EU server's out to get me. But yeah, I also I do practice my champions that like I want to play like on stage,
like Zoe 2 days ago. You played a Zoe game. You went 7-15.
That's a different one.
But
look at my reel. Look at my reel. Hey, look at my reel. I have 20 games in reel with a 40% win rate. Maybe I'm just too bad at the champion. I don't know, but you know, I just have to practice it. And sometimes I can't play like actual normal tank care champions in EOS solo queue because it's not enough to win games, even if you get 20 leads in the first 10 minutes for your team. That's it. That's my rant.
Fair play. Right. The duo worked out. You guys did smoke some 2v2s, that's for sure. You guys did especially like in the final series, you did smoke some ball lanes.
If I combine all my accounts as LP, I'm actually rank one, if you're wondering.
Okay. I mean, what happens if Skumon starts combining his accounts, or do we not do that?
We don't do that. He's playing jungle role, doesn't count.
Jungle role is just too OP, I think.
Yeah.
Agreed. So Mickey agrees that solo queue is useless.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much.
That's what he has said now. That's going to be the title of the video, Mickey. Like,
but duo queue is OP.
Duo queue is OP. We're not putting that in the title. We want to upset people. That's we want to make people angry.
I mean, we could have the most banger episode. We talk about so many things super in depth, and then if you put the title like as something that people don't agree with, you see the Reddit thread. There's not one comment about any of the conversation. It is just always like
the title.
It's always just some random bullshit. Look, this is a fucking shout out to the Reddit thread right here. If you actually get to this point in the video, somebody type a comment and see if you actually like got to this point in the video and like anyone has actually been here to, you know, verify that we had some conversations that weren't just about whatever the title was.
That's a good
actually, maybe
yeah.
maybe we fucking do 5D chess and then this becomes the title. Like Redditors only care about the title. Holy fuck.
Actually, we'll talk about it.
Into the AM. They have, of course, supported Last Free Nation for a very long time, and they have kept us very, very stylish and very, very comfy. Their t-shirts, like this one, they come with very, very nice prints. Usually my concern when it comes to t-shirts like this is that I wash them because I sweat a lot when I sit here, and I wash them, and then I just think to myself, oh, it's going to get ruined very, very fast. But this, bro, the fabric sits on me the same way, doesn't shrink because I don't know how to do my washes, so I need something that is just idiot-proof for me. This doesn't shrink. The print stays the same. I've washed this so many times. The cool thing about the t-shirt is it kind of makes me look more jacked. It's a little bit more tight here around the arms. Then it has like this V-taper shape as well, which is super, super cool. I like that. Anything that makes me look better, you know, that is the purpose of clothes in the end. Into the AM currently, you know, they have a 70% clearance sale, you know. It's up to 70% off select items, and you can combine that with, of course, the LFN code for an additional 10%, you know, discount. I almost said bonus, but I guess in some sense it is a bonus because I promise you, you would buy this at full price if you just jump into the store, check it out, use code LFN at checkout, and tell them that we sent you. We would like to thank, of course, Into the AM for supporting The Last Free Nation for such a long time, and make sure that you dress as cool as us. Go for it. What are you waiting for? Just turn off this, pause the video and go buy something.
So the finals, boys. What the fuck happened there, guys? KC3-0 and they fucked them up. Like, it wasn't even like, bro, that game 3, I have been in that desperate spot where you draft complete garbage because you just try to do something different to make the game chaotic in a way. What is your takeaway about this finals, Mickey?
Well, I think first it was a huge prep gap, like G2 said in their first series against KC. It was the other way around this time.
Okay.
Because they didn't really seem to prioritize the Skarner. I think I experienced Skarner firsthand. I think it's a very strong champion in the current meta. I think it's worth a first pick. They decided to give even the first game they didn't first pick it. They picked Ezreal, fair enough, it's a takeaway. The enemy team doesn't pick Skarner either. They picked Maokai. They picked Vi into Maokai, which I thought Maokai is good into Vi, maybe not. But I think Skarner is like a pretty solid champion into the Maokai. But it doesn't seem like they really picked it. So that was definitely a blunder. And then they also picked Leona into... What did they pick into?
Varus.
Raw. Like, I'm not sure about that one. I think there's a lot of champions that can just like win the game on 3 on support there into Leona. Then after the game, like in the game, I think... Like the first 10 minutes were kind of like disgusting to watch. Like the mid lane ganks were many mechanical misplays. Like,
bro, that first mid lane gank, I just screamed like the entire time. It was just I progressively like screamed louder and louder in more pain until the play was over. And I was like they're nervous.
Okay, and then they cue him out of Rell spell.
Yeah. You see like the flash cue from Rell. He just goes flying like, oh my God, man, I couldn't handle it.
And then even after that, like, Maokai goes to gank mid, he flashes, and then Ariana is, like, too far, so he doesn't actually connect. And then Ariana turns around, Maokai ults, and then Talia uses W, E, just before the root connects, instead of waiting, like, half a second for the root to connect.
Yep.
So he misses it. And then after that as well, when they like trying to dive the Talia, when they do like Vi, Orianna, and Leona combo, like all of them. Like, that was crazy.
I mean, honestly, when I rewatched that, it was more just, at least the way that I saw it, it was more just the Orianna ult being really bad because the Leona spells were actually
One of them should wait. Target. Like for sure, Orianna, Leona, one of them should wait. Like either of them wait, it's good.
I just feel like it's always Orianna that waits there because like Leona, it's going to go in, the guy is CC'd and you're just going to drop all your spells so he stays CC'd and then you're just going to use your ult for damage at the end as Orianna. Yeah, so
that's true.
For me, it was just like, I think that was just a Captain's play on the mid lane because obviously Lebrov died for it, so it looked like really disgusting. But when I rewatched it, my take was actually that it was just Caps making a misplay there.
He ulted on Leona E, but Leona ends up behind him, so he pulls him in when he should have just Q out that it was free. But then, bro, the rest of the game, like it was, at least from how I watched it, it seemed as if KC, after playing against you guys, because I thought a big strength that you guys had, which was better than anybody in the league, was you and Razork in terms of how you guys controlled the river from like minute 6 to like 15 and how you pressure into like enemy like blue side camp or red side camp and bottom side river. I think you guys did this better than anybody. It's like you guys were like pressuring camps, catching people. And then it seemed like KC, after playing against you guys, also applied this because from watching, it seemed like Caps was not getting any backup. Like Lebrov was always late. He was like on bot wave. It seems like their AD, I don't know what it was, but they were like afraid of their AD dying when it's like Varus just like queuing the wave. And they like it seemed like they never really had like flow in the game to actually like contest on the mid wave. What is your read on, I guess, Lebrov in specific as a player? Because he's falling under a lot of scrutiny. And I think in this finals, he played quite atrocious.
I mean, I think it's like, I'm not sure if I would put all the blame on him. I think I would. Okay, so my first blame on him would be the picks that he went for. I think those were the worst part about like the series. I think in the game he was just like, I guess he was a lot on the like a lot of the plays, and he wasn't really there mid to cover Caps or either punish Vladdy in the other cases. I'm not really sure like what they were doing in lane, but like I also didn't look like that deep onto like what match was actually playing or like what was going on there. But yeah, it just kind of looked like wherever the action was, he was not really there on time. And then afterwards, I think he was getting a little bit stressed, like in the Leona game where he was like 1 HP trying to clear the ward and then he just like dies. Like he flashed out, I think, and then he just went back in to clear the ward and then died. He was like, he was kind of pulling like a Mickey X in that one. So I think maybe it's just like a G2 support thing.
Well, I mean, I couldn't tell if the idea, like the champion picks were because his game won. Like after the first couple times he died, he was just like running it down. I was wondering how much of it was just them band-aiding the situation and being like, bro, you're fucking running it. Like just give you something that's comfortable so you stop running it. So I couldn't tell if that was the idea because I don't know who the fuck wants to play Thresh there on like in game number 3. Who wants to play Thresh in general right now? I feel like there's like so few situations where the champion is actually good.
Just to add, it's like it reminds me of like the series you played against him last year, right? It's like you were just blind picking Nautilus with Relban and he was just picking Rakan. On TV into your Naut. And it seems like he's very like hard committed to certain champs because it's like we mentioned the Thresh, we mentioned the Leona in the 1-2-3, but also there was a blind Blitzcrank. that was a blind Blitzcrank.
I think that was the worst offense.
Really crazy.
That was the way worse than the other two. But yeah, I think it's like Blitz with zero setup and into like Yone. And Alistar is open, just like picking it raw into like nothing. I was like, mind blown.
Huh? Yeah, I was pretty mind blown. I mean, that's why my only conclusion could have been that he was just like, since he was choking, they tried to give him something that he was comfortable on. That was like the only thing that I could see that would make sense for the situation. But I mean, also I would say that this is something that has kind of plagued Lebrov throughout his career. He gets really addicted to like a couple champions and he just becomes like the guy that's picking that all the time. And as soon as you ban that out, once teams figure that out, you see a huge performance drop off. Like I remember in 2023, it was the Blitzcrank. He was playing Blitzcrank like every fucking game. Then in 2024, like summer, it was Rel every fucking game. And then like he couldn't play Leona, right? Like that was the whole thing, is that he couldn't play Leona. So people like you are like, give me Nautilus blind, like who gives a fuck, like I'll just play this Nautilus blind, it's all good. And that was before Leona got nerfed, where it was just considered super OP, you know, like everyone was just blind picking this champion because it's so much armor, you're so unkillable, it's just really a freakish to play. And then also the jungle meta, things like Ivern bolster the Leona, and you know, with AP junglers, I feel like it's nice to have like a tankier support in a situation like that. So it was It was pretty...
Warmogs as well. The fucking Warmogs are so broken.
That was balanced, yeah.
Yeah, Warmogs, Leona. Yeah, no, it was really good. Was there any part of you, like, obviously you lost, which sucks, but like when you saw like Lebrov like running it down and being like was there any part of you that was like, I would have won that shit, like I would have won that title right there? No. Just saying, like, you too.
Are you saying, though? I would never think like that.
Oh, okay, perfect. That's good to know. It's good to know that you're also a psychopath. Perfect.
How about the flip side? Seeing Casey stomp G2, did it make your loss feel a little bit better?
Yeah, of course. I mean, well, first, I was a bit triggered because I felt like we should have won against Casey. Therefore, we should have won the split. But then I was also like, I was happy for Yike because I think Yike deserved it. But at the same time, I was also happy that Casey won against G2. So yeah, it was like a mixed bag of emotions. Yeah, but overall, it's all right.
No,
they can have this one.
I can relate this feeling with like when we 2022 summer, when we lost against Rogue, that felt like shit because that was such a free split. Because like,
G2
was not the greatest. Like they didn't play like Yumi, no Lucian, Nami, no Lulu. Yeah. Like they had no champions. No, I can relate to that one. It's like it got away. It's like if you just didn't pick MF. No, I'm kidding. Then you would have won the split.
Everyone game two. But yeah.
Yeah, that one too, yeah. And in the grand scheme of things, I guess you guys, your confidence is unwavering, and you guys are gonna like bounce back and do well. But something that always comes up on Sacktown is, and something that is discussed often, right, is the enigma that is Humanoid. So I had the pleasure of working with him, and I have a view of him, and historically, it seems like Humanoid doesn't get along well with his supports. He's very, very demanding, and if that relationship is tarnished in one direction, he like kind of he does his thing and plays super, super good, and is like, in my impression, is like very good at the game. But if he kind of gives up on you mentally, he's going to treat you in a very specific way. I'm curious about your experience. How has it been working with Humanoid? Are there a lot of conflicts there? How is it? How are you maneuvering around that with Humanoid?
Yeah, I don't think he gave up on me just yet. I do think like we have a lot of discussions about how we want to play the game, which is, I think, the biggest part of, I guess, improving us as a team, because, yeah, there's some plays we actually just don't see the same way. So yeah, I think that's the main thing we're working on. But yeah, I think overall Marek is like a very good player. Like individually, I feel like he has a very good understanding of wave management, that's one. And then also he kind of plays most of the champs. I think the downsides of his are, I think, draft. I think sometimes he just picks a champ because he like feels like playing the champ, not because of what enemy champs are or what your champs are. It just doesn't matter. Just like he sees one champ enemy team, oh yeah, I want to play like Teemo into that because I don't know. But it might be shit against everything else in the game. So I have to step in there sometimes. And then, yeah, I think usually he always gets leads in his lane. Like, I feel like every time whatever lane he plays, I feel like he always does well. Maybe not the game 5 against Aurora, but he had no flash there. And sucks for him. But yeah, normally I always feel like I can just go mid and get a lead. Or he always has like a good situation where he's like enemy mid laner just can't farm. So I just go there to pressure. So in that sense, I think pretty good. But yeah, I think the main thing is just actually being on the same page in how we want to play mid game. And I think for that, we just have to watch a lot of other regions and find like examples of how good teams play situations out. And then just talk about it and do the same, I guess. Yeah. Or yeah.
So there's something that Jackie said. He's like, I think Humanoid is good, but he just gets help from his teammates. in terms of setting that up, how is the dynamic like different? Because it's like, obviously, it's like when you play with Caps, it was like a lot of action happened around mid. It's like something that we always see with Caps teams. How is that dynamic in terms of how you and Razork work together with Humanoid in order to like pressure like bottom side river, making sure that he has the info to just pressure?
I mean, I think a lot of it is also how Upset wants to play the game as well. So like if Upset, usually he's the one that makes the plans. And then if he doesn't need us to make like a play with him or be on his lane, then we usually go to help Marek. Or if Marek says like, oh yeah, enemy mid lane is just like completely fucked, then we go there to do that first. Unless bot lane is also like in the same situation. But then we just have to decide like what is more valuable. But I think in general, I think we don't really play around Marek as much, but because usually we kind of play around like Upset, and then if he doesn't need us, then I guess that'll be the second lane to play around. But I think all of it just depends on the champions, right? Like, if we have a champ that can be alone or as an AD carry, like Ezreal, Zeri, Kai'Sa, something like that, they can join us later. Maybe not MF, can't really join that easily.
Okay. All right, never mind.
But you have dash.
Then, yeah, we just play around Marek, right? And a lot of times in mid-game, he's the champ that is actually OP because he's like over-leveled and stuff and has more items. So usually he's the one that we should pressure around. So usually we go to his lane for that reason. But yeah, I think other than that, it's not really much different than how I was doing things in the past. Like with G2, for example, it was pretty much the same thing. So yeah.
So you mentioned like the dynamic of like Upset doing the calls. How can you compare the dynamic? Because from outside, we also understood that like Hansama did a lot of communication on G2. How different is the dynamic, and how would you define the dynamic with you working together with Upset? Because often it's like you're referred to as someone that maybe talks a little bit less in the game and likes to focus on your own game. So can you tell us about the situation you have with your dual queue partner?
I mean, I think the main difference is that Hans always wants to have stuff happen around him, or like he's very adamant in that sense. But Upset also calls you to do something for mid lane, for example, or like he's just like better at judging if he actually needs us or not than Hans. But Hans will like pretty much always want to do something around his lane, and then there's a chance that you actually just get like a mega lead. But Upset might not be as confident in getting that lead to his lane, so then he will go to somewhere else that makes more sense in his mind, which usually is pretty good, you know. So yeah, I think that's the main difference. But other than that, I think they're quite similar in how they do stuff.
So yeah. The Upset, the KDA player, you think?
No, I don't really think so. But
I mean, he had the highest KDA in playoffs.
Actually,
you
I was
guys
surprised.
Didn't win.
Yeah, it's crazy. Because like,
I'm just saying, like he
I
probably
like
should have
was kind of dying a lot.
A couple times.
I feel like he was dying a lot, but he still had his like, I don't know how he did it. But yeah, I think he's just like an AD carry thing.
Mm. I always find it funny when like instead of like discussing like times where he could have like done more damage, it's always just like he didn't die enough. It's like you want him to just like flash into the enemy. Like he would get like just some social credit if he just flash ease into the enemy team as Ezreal, like insta dies. It's like, nice, we did it.
That is kind of how it works, yeah, nowadays.
Yeah, cool.
Bro, that Kalista game was crazy, bro. Like, I don't know, both Kalista games he played this season, like that, there was that fight on Dragon where he was like fucking bouncing over the wall and baiting like the Sejuani in and like posturing on the Poppy time. I don't know if you guys remember this one, but like, I rewatched like that a couple of times. That was like fucking mind blowing. And it's like, there's the Upset is just one of those players that is less liked, so he gets less respect for what he does. But I thought that the AD carry pool was quite competitive, the split. And as a follow-up, it's like, you know, Kalis is a guy that everybody talks about. Like, what is your overall impression of playing against him? You guys fucked him up in lane a couple of times. What do you think about Kalis as a newcomer?
I think the main thing about him is that he just has quite good mechanics, good movement as well. Like, usually when you have play like 2v2 situations and stuff, it's kind of like annoying to play against him because he will like always like try to dodge like everything, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. When it doesn't, you feel really good about it because it's just like he got too cocky and he got punished. But then if you get outplayed, then it's just like mega sucks because it's mega styled on you. But I think overall, I think he's like a little bit overhyped. I feel like everyone says like he's like mega insane, which I think is good, but I think he's like better than like Upset or Hans or. And I guess that's about it. I think it's like third best, but I think
about
overall,
Patrick.
I think Patrick is like around fifth Fourth. Best.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah. Okay. That's your old boy, you know. That's I wanted boy, to see right? Yeah. I wanted to see if he would, you know,
that's
hype him up.
Crazy.
Fifth. Okay. Oh,
maybe not,
really
maybe
are
not in the current split, but like overall. Like
I'm
sure next split he will be like better. But
only Mickey's just his agent, okay.
All right, all right. That's the most praise Patrick has gotten in the last 3 years,
is,
I'm pretty sure.
I think Patrick is the GOAT. Like, I think this guy is so fucking good, but I don't know what is happening to him, the split. But anyway, I think just for Kalist, I think his laning needs some work. I'm not, maybe that's like just the whole bot lane duo as a general. I feel like a lot of the times, level 1-2, they're not aware how matchups should play out, so they misplay a lot in those scenarios. But I think other than that, they usually play teamfights quite well together, like Kalist especially. Like usually, in a good position, And yeah, I think the most impressive part is probably just the movement for me, at least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think it's crazy that people were talking more about Kallist than Vladdy. I mean, I guess just because Kallist is French, but it's like the better rookie is like on your team. Even like I'm watching him fucking carry like every game. Like,
yeah, Vladdy was kind of crazy. Yeah.
Like, I don't know. It's just like Kallist was good, but he also made like pretty big mistakes. Like he got solo killed quite a bit. I mean, they got 2v2 killed quite a bit. Off his
even
mistakes,
that game four,
right?
I remember like he had 34 items with a zillion, and he just gets Ornn comboed on the mid wave.
Ornn Q into E, that was crazy.
I saw the Yamato clip. Yamato had a short where he's like hyping up Kallist. He's like, Kallist, four item Zeri. It's about time that he's gonna do something. Watch the Zeri here. And then he just walks up and gets like Ornn comboed and died. And it's just like, all right, well, there we go. You know, caster cursed.
That's
fun. It was a rough one, but he seems to have like the good, like I think what you described seems to be the good, like for me that's a good approach in order to make sure that you become like actively better, because like a lot of players they come in, they stagnate, and they like are okay with just getting through things, but he seems to look to squeeze always, which is super good. I think that's exciting. And on the follow-up, it's like, I do think it's like, if I look at this KC team, it's like, there is like three potential like MVP candidates, even though it's kind of weird when you have a situation where, like usually the way I would approach this is like, there's one player and then Vladdy is the one that stands out, but even like Kana and Yike were fucking incredible. Like Kana was an absolute monster. He like kind of took out his revenge after dropping that game at Worlds against you, bro. He was just angry.
I guess, yeah. He was in DK or what?
Yeah, it was DK, yeah. It was, do you guys want to talk first stand? Do you got something else done before we jump into first stand?
No, I mean, through first stand, we could talk about what I wanted to talk about, which was the like lane swap changes and stuff, and what Mickey thinks of them. So, I mean, we can start there, actually, since it is the patch that they're going to be playing on. Like, what do you think about this this patch? Because I do think that it might hurt some teams more than others, and I don't know if you would be, you know, kind of triggered that you didn't get to play on this anti lane swap patch, because I mean, obviously Fnatic's one of the best bot lanes.
I think it's a bit unlucky. I think that it only got introduced now that we're out, but I'm just looking forward to next split, because I think laning is just like the most fun part about playing the game, and I think me and Upset are also very good, so. And also, I think Oscar is like mega good in lane. So I think just for us in general, it's going to be a big buff, because we were a little bit stupid in lane swaps, I have to admit. So I'm glad it's over, finally. I was praying for times like this. So yeah, I think overall, just good. Keep it out of there.
Yeah. Do you think that like KC will do better or worse at first end because of the removal of lane swaps? Because it seemed like they were actually pretty decent at it. I think TL is going to get fucked. Like, just saying.
I think TL is going to be worse. Yeah, that's why I'm thinking of their opposition. Like, if
Top Esports, Crisp and Jackie.
Yeah, I think they're going to be fine there. I think who is for HLE is Viper and
Viper Delight. Oh,
that might be a rough one now. Yeah, I mean, I think it's not going to be too bad for them, but that's mostly because I think the opposition also is not the strongest laners, I would say, except HLE. They might have a rough one there. But yeah, overall, I think KC was getting away with some good situations from the swaps, at least compared to laning, from my perspective at least. So yeah, I think they should be all right though.
It's crazy though that they get to... It's because the other teams have more time to prepare. It's like the patch drops now and they fly to Korea. They have media, jet lag, flight, and then they have to... Like practice, because like at least in my mind, I think the community underestimates how much lane swaps being in the game actually like affects the game, because it affects like the whole draft. It's like most of the time, it's like draft is based around like the first 5 minutes. Can you survive them? Yes, and then are your champions useful? But
laners, I think
for sure. Yeah, I think Tana should be happy. Doesn't like to play the tanks. But the Team Liquid KC matchup is the one that is going to be the most fun. But Kojeje and Yeon, bro, they are decent. Bro. They're good, fucking good. Yeah. They're fucking good. It's gonna be a banger.
They're the second best bot lane there.
Oh, damn!
Damn. Okay.
Holy.
I can see it. I mean, Jackie Love Crisp. I mean, Jackie Love and Crisp. The thing is like Crisp was good, but I mean, they were good, but they weren't really like lane kings or anything. They were just good at playing around the map in general. Like Crisp Kanavi synergy was actually pretty good. So I could see it. I could see it.
Yeah. Well, this I is mean, Mickey beat
my
them.
Opinion of them. My opinion of them kind of dropped after last year. Yeah. Yeah. Otherwise, I'd probably, you know, put them second, but after playing against them.
Well, you played against them. Well, what do you mean? Because you played against them individually.
Yeah.
But like you didn't get to play against like the combo,
I played against
you know?
Both individually. Yeah, that's true. I didn't play against a combo, but I think Mako is better. But I mean, than Crisp at least. And then wait, who did Jackie Love? Wait, who did Crisp have? Oh, he had Light.
Yeah, he had Light.
No, I
wasn't. That wasn't a bad bot lane, bro. Crisp and Light, they were bad.
No. You have no idea. Anyway,
they're just bad.
Yeah,
Mickey gets to split. Terrible. He beat them both. He gets.
I've never lost to Light at least in my life. So there's that.
Really?
Never.
Light is I mean, domestically, that guy is like one of the kings of LPL, bro. That guy is so good. Generally.
Good for him, yeah.
They just aren't used to the Poppy support, man. What can they do?
True.
And in terms of upsets, do you guys see anything happening, or are we just gonna have top esports Hanwha Live finals?
I would assume so. Yeah,
I think so.
I think
too,
it's gonna be hard. I think the problem for KC. I mean, I did another talk show this morning where we talked about it like this in depth. And my biggest issue with KC is I don't think that they play fast enough to like they're gonna give too many chances to top esports at Hanwha Live, in my opinion. Like they play very like. Low, almost like ERL macro, where it's like break fights, long periods of nothing happening, and I feel like that's the moment where top esports and Hanwha Life is just gonna like they're gonna find something in those moments, and KC will fall apart when that happens. That's what I think, but I do think that like KC has the potential to beat top esports. I think versus Hanwha Life, they're completely fucked though.
I can see it.
It's strange that it like I think the fearless thing being an aspect here is also like a really big deal. But like the coaches that these two teams are sending to, these are also like some legends. Like Hanwha Live have Dandy and fucking Mowgli, who have fucking a lot of accomplishments under their belt and a lot of experience. And then I always don't know how to pronounce his name, but Homie. The JDG legend coach comes back and like whips his team back into shape. So the prep aspect of it is going to be super interesting, but just the idea that they have the least amount of time in comparison to the other teams is going to be like a tough mountain to climb, because Team Liquid has been in Korea for quite some time as well in terms of preparing. And I know that C9's there, Fly is there. I don't know how much like scrim access they have, right? But I imagine like all Korean teams are probably like busy in preparation for even the next split. So even that aspect is a very big deal.
Yeah, they probably have some scrims with I can't say too much, but they probably have some scrims with Korean teams. I think Korean teams are all pretty much preparing, starting now.
Okay, because we predicted the whole bracket. Are you a TL Coper, Dom? You think TL beats KC?
No, I mean I don't even think like after lane swaps are removed, that was one of the main things that helped TL get through, but. I don't know. I'm just the biggest Humpty hater at this point, man. I think that this guy will solo lose you so many games. Like it's just the shit he does. Like even in the game three, you know, like the game three, they win, they 3-0 100 Thieves. He makes like five bad mistakes, like five like potential game losing mistakes, and like none of them matter. It's like the grubs were bad. Then he makes another play, bot that was bad. Then he makes a third play, gets caught. It's like you cannot do this internationally. Like I'm even worried that I've never watched CFO play. I'm worried that maybe TL could lose to CFO.
Again, Junjia is gonna put it all up in Humpty.
He might put it all up in Humpty, bro, live on camera, bro. It might be tough, bro. It might be tough to watch, you know, like
there's me watching is someone jungle competitively and then to sit there and think that if I played, they would still win. That shouldn't ever be a player that goes to an international one. It's like, if it's Armao, you know, I get it. You know, he's not on a winning team, but my man won the split.
Yeah.
And then he's talking shit as well online, you know. It's like, oh, it's only best of threes. I'm going to show up big time in best of fives. Then he's in like in the interview and he's like proud of the win. It's like, come on, man. Like,
he kind of backed off at the end, you know. At the end, he was just like, he's like, yeah, I mean, people are going to say all the other guys are better than me. And like, he just paused and it's like, but at least I won, you know, like that was just it. It was like, you know, like actually based, like that is what he got. Like he got to get a trophy. The other guys are just better at jungle is what it is.
That's what it is.
It's good to be honest. Yep. Yeah. Bro, like we from my side, we covered everything Fnatic LEC base. I'm so happy for you guys. I'm so happy for you guys. Do you have anything to throw in, Mickey? Did we miss anything? Anything that pisses you off? What makes you angry, man?
A lot of things make me angry.
All right, pick the top three, bro.
Yep.
Let's get it out there.
Let me see.
Trying to get him canceled real quick right before, like, the last thing is just make some enemies and then we'll end the show. Perfect.
Actually, I guess I didn't really understand why people were, like, actually flaming me for the KC series. Because, like, I get game one, sure. Game one, I was ranting on rail. But, like, the Nautilus game, like, I was legit mega smurfing up until the last hook. And then, apparently, I solos that one. My bad. And then, Rakan game, I was kind of also 1v9. And then, Pi game, okay, I was kind of useless. But at least I wasn't inting. No. In the little game, yeah, not much I could have done there. But somehow the narrative was that I was inting the series, which I didn't really understand. Because, like, I feel like if I had, like, a different name, I would probably not get flamed. But for some reason, it's, like, cool to hate on me because I won in the past. So now it's, like, I need to, like, win every game and be, like, 20-0 for me to be, like, considered I had a good series. Just good. Not like insane or anything. It was serviceable. So that was, something that kind of triggered me on.
You read Reddit or what? Where do you get this from, bro?
Yeah, I saw it on Reddit.
Reddit.
On bro, Reddit, I put they you were... as the best performing support of the split, and I thought you guys outperformed bot lane.
Some people would disagree,
which is crazy, by the way. Like, even that Nautilus game, like, bro, some of the angles that you found were fucking nuts. Yeah. But I think people look at your KDA, bro.
I think there's also this dynamic where because Targimus like also played well in moments, like he like, you know, he had some good like fights, then it has to be like people make it almost like a 1v1 game. It's like just because somebody else performs or like plays well doesn't mean that you had like an equal opportunity to make a similar play or like win the final team fight. And I feel like a lot of people kind of, they're like, one guy played well, which means that he's outplaying like his counterpart directly. But it's like, that's just not how the game is working. It's like you're limited by the opportunities that are presented in the game. Like if you're playing a Lulu game five and that is like how the game is, it's going to be pretty hard to actually, you know, make your mark on the game. Like you're not playing something that has the agency to do everything. So I think that there's like this assumption that everyone has equal opportunities in games, but a lot of times like engages and stuff like that are predicated on the setup beforehand and, you know, the enemy carries making mistakes as opposed to the support playing like super insane. I think that that's probably the biggest issue that I see with like community perception in times like this.
If it provides you any comfort, I just pulled up the DPM lol, like the scoring that is there, and you have a higher score than Targamos. You have 6.1 and he has a 6.
Nice.
I gave you a 7 and I gave Targamos a 4. So like that's where I'm at, you know, if that also makes you feel better.
I remember there was on the front page of Reddit was the interview with like there was the richest podcast thingy where there was like quote about something about Fnatic, right? So I watched that, and in that one I was getting flamed for like I don't even know, like for putting us in like bad lane state or something like this, but like I really could not understand what I think it was the Kira guy talking about it. I was like, what the fuck is this guy on about? So I was like mega mind blown. I didn't have like my best years of my life, right? But yeah, I don't think I was like inting it, at least.
I would say Razok did, but you don't need to comment on that.
Nah.
my boy Razorko, bro. Razor, no, the Sinza when he walked into the Drake.
Yeah, actually, that was when I was dead. Yeah, I was just timing summoners, and then all of a sudden I was like, "Ah, it's been saying, wait, what?" I thought we're not fighting this Drake.
The volley was crazy, like, bro.
I mean, I was just sitting there. I'm like, "All right, so because Mickey is dead, that means they're giving. Never mind, they're fighting the soul." And then I see like the last 1 minute of Baron and like humanoids like catching top wave at his own tier two. I'm like, "This game is fucked. This game is actually fucked right here. Like, this is not gonna be a win." So, you know, it is what it is, bro. Sometimes that shit happens. Look. I mean, now that I coach Blabber, it's a struggle with junglers, like trying to put the leash on them, you know.
Yeah, sometimes the ADHD gets to you. I had the same.
The second thing that makes you angry, and then we can end it there.
Come on, man! What the fuck? Jesus Christ!
I don't know.
That was a good one, though. That was a good one.
Solo queue. Solo queue makes me angry, actually.
Solo queue. Okay.
Nice. Yeah, same. Just usual. That's why I don't really play that much anymore.
Yeah, I don't know. That's why you saw I have a Zoe match history, because at some point I was like, nah, I can't play normal champs in this either. I need to like play something funny, so at least if I lose, I have some fun. But I didn't have fun in that one either.
Oh, I have the opposite approach. Like, because since I don't play much, like when I do play, I'm trying to like, you know, grind. I'm like, okay, I'm going to try to play the least amount of games and try to get Challenger. That's always like what's in my head. So I just like torture myself and I'm like, I'm going to play my best champion every single game. And I'll look at like the draft and it's like my top laner will just like hover Nunu with like Ghost Cleanse, and then he'll switch to like Kale or some shit. I go into the game, he has like Ghost Ignite on Kale. I'm like, this is, what the fuck is happening? And then I just like experience getting like hardcore ran down. Like I had a fucking Rakan 80 carry. Mind you, this is GM Challenger North America. I had a Rakan 80 carry recently. Like
I had a Fiora.
I know the Fiora guy. Is that black pink Fiora guy? Is that who you played with? Yeah, okay, okay. But that guy actually plays it, you know? I had a guy who mains 80 carry. He mains Jhin. And then one day he just lost his mind. I don't know what happened in his life, but he just lost his mind. And now he's just started queuing up AP Rakan as the 80 carry position, and he's just running it with cleanse, by the way. Like he doesn't even have like with cleanse, and I'm just like playing these games not out bad, and I'm like, bro, like do I need to win this to get to Challenger? Like this is the game. Okay, nice. These are the games that I need to be winning in order to get there. This is a great system. I love it. So yeah, nice. We can all be triggered by solo queue, and I'll just be triggered by solo queue for the rest of my life. I'm mid 30s and I'm still getting triggered by solo queue. It's an amazing thing that we have going on here.
I have so much fun with solo queue, bro. But if you guys open my op.gg, you guys will get disease. Like you will, your eyeballs will pop out.
I've done it before.
I played like 15 games on Nidalee straight, and I completely ran it down all 15 games, and it was I'm in the deep end now, but I'm working my way up. I'm playing Rumble. I'm working my way up. I'm coming for you, Mickey. I'll be in your Duke Q games very soon.
Perfect. Okay, nice.
I'm going the opposite direction, so we're gonna meet eventually.
So number three. No, I'm just kidding.
Number three, Ruddy Sack. Let's talk about it.
Let's talk about fucking Ruddy Sack. What the fuck is wrong with those bums?
So what do you want to say about Ruddy Sack?
I don't know how did you guys manage to lose? Like it was crazy watching that, and your reviews were like so low elo to listen to as well. Like it was crazy.
What was the issues with the reviews? Let's hear it.
I feel like you guys never actually discussed like the core of the issue. You just talked about like the end result, what happened. Like a lot of times, the guy was like, "Oh yeah, we need to fight here because we need to fight here." When like for example, leader's like pushing aside, you're 4v5, and then your team wants to fight. I was like, "Oh, we should have tipped it in there." It was like we should have fight here, but like you can just wait for the guy to show inside or something. And there was also the Gabagi Gabagoo example. You remember that one?
Yeah.
Thomas was like, you guys were discussing if we should go bot or top, but the main problem is he's not on the mid wave, and the mid wave is meeting, but no one actually talked about it. But yeah.
Oh, we did.
Yeah, after I mentioned it in the chat, I wrote in the chat.
Okay.
I have to say though, my defense is in the beginning. Honestly, this was my mistake. I didn't know how to balance if it should be like let people argue for fun or not do it, because I didn't know how serious they were.
Yeah.
And then it turns out leader was like giga fucking angry. I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
You were serious?
Sure you guys should have discussed this, like before you guys started this shit.
It was a rough one.
Fun watches.
Yeah, I mean we did discuss before we started everything, and then like just the elephant in the room was that we were so much more disgustingly shit than like anyone could have ever imagined in any fucking world. So it was like, yeah, like it'll be fun, you know, we'll win and have fun and we'll like just joke around. Like if we don't beat Los Ratones, like who really cares? It's like, guys, we're losing to Bulldog. Like Bulldog is actually a comprehensively better team than us at this point. Like they're actually just beating our ass. Like we can't beat them. You know, I was surprised that anyone could beat them, because when I was watching the games, I just thought that they were the fucking goats. Like I thought they were just gonna win NLC. Like these guys were too fucking good. So like by the time that we actually started like trying to like reel it in, it was too late. And also I think that because of like what we discussed originally, like people signed up for a different project than it ended up being. It's like, hey guys, we want to try hard, and it's like if you're doing this like content model and people are like, I don't really want to scrim, I don't really want to try that hard, it's just like, well, nice.
Yeah.
I guess like shit, like, well, I guess we're fucked then. Like it is what it is. So yeah, we got to reshape everything
as well.
What'd you say?
Yankos on Brent made me really mad as well.
Oh, that was...
Yeah. Tough.
That spells flying, bro.
It's okay. It's fine. We're reshaping the sack, bro. The sack is going to be, you know, we got to empty the sack and then fill it back up, you know, over time, because that's the only way to recharge the sack, you know? Like, there's nothing, there's no magic potion you can take. You just got to wait until, you know, you're ready to go again. So, yeah, hopefully we can come to the NLC with something different in the next split. Anyways, that is going to be the end of Sackdown episode 27 with Mickey X. That was a good one, bro. I enjoyed it. So good luck to you in the next split, and we'll reconvene some other time.